time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Every time they said it was doomed, it's not doomed. Nothing bad is going to happen. There was a whole bunch of media that wanted to pretend and play fearmonger with them. They still are. They're wrong. Stop listening to their podcast. We'll tell you the truth over here.
Russ Dellinger.
Of all the coaches made, you know, $500,000 to $2 million, probably wouldn't be looking at this right now, but it's the big driver.
And SI's Pat Forte.
The guys that stay in school in basketball right now that are getting the big NIL deals because they aren't getting picked. I do not think we are going to see the absolute heavy favorite to be the number one pick in the NFL draft stay in college.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ, Race for the Case, Week 2 edition. Interesting week. We only have two matchups featuring ranked teams against each other. Texas at Alabama, Ole Miss at Tulane. However, whole bunch of Power 5 versus Power 5 games that I think are pretty interesting. We got a bunch of other stuff, and then we have an update on the biohazard. I have a shocking, shocking development.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
You good? Is the varsity off the hook? I guess we'll have to wait and see.
No, okay. We'll see. But, no, I have not been proven wrong, Pat, because I am never wrong as my race, except in Race for the Case. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. How's that for a tease, huh? How's that? I'm not even going to tell you when.
It's huge. Keep huge.
You got to, yeah. I don't know a reaction to a story more like than that one. People are very excited. Anyway, let's start where the college football world is not centered in Tuscaloosa, Alabama this weekend. No, heck no. It's Boulder, Colorado. That's where Coach Prime, the Buffaloes, America's team, is going to take on Nebraska. Colorado is ranked 22nd. We talked about this the other day. I want to ask two questions, and I'll start with the Colorado angle. Travis Hunter was absolutely electrifying last week. It was one of the most exciting. I thought, Pat, you put it together extremely well on the overreaction show. Never really seen a performance like this. And I think I also read in one of your columns, like, since maybe Gordy Lockbaum at Holy Cross in the 80s.
Yeah.
And no offense to Gordy, but you ain't Travis Hunter, although he did somehow finish third in Heisman voting or something like that, which is crazy. I think he was on the cover of SI.
He was. Rick Riley wrote a whole thing like, vote for Gordy Lockbaum for the Heisman, and people listened.
Oh, God. I mean, come on. Wasn't Bo Jackson playing that year?
No, it was after Bo Jackson.
Anyway, that pair, Rick Riley troting up Gordy Lockbaum, classic SI. Oh my!
Let's find a football player from the Northeast and make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, a white guy who's like, he's playing two ways. He played Colgate, dude. Anyway, Travis Hunter is Gordy Lockbaum was an excellent football player, and I do remember that name. But so we take nothing from. I don't think Gordy's sitting there going, "Ah, Travis Hunter, that's pretty much me." How many snaps can he reasonably play? I mean, he played 129 snaps against TCU. I watched one of Deion Sanders' 43 social media shows. He's basically like Fox News now. It's 24/7, just another show, CNN. He's just rolling shows all day long. We get one of those sleep cameras. You get like little kids. Crib cam. Just watch Deion sleep. Where's my theme music? Where's my nighttime? Read me a book. He said, I'm not letting him on the field or do anything till Wednesday, right? He's giving him the NFL treatment.
Yeah.
There ain't going to be no Oklahoma drills on Sunday for Travis Hunter, which is great. But how many snaps can he reasonably play going forward? Because that's a lot. There's a reason we've never seen it done. And it's not, Travis Hunter is great, but he's not the only great one that's ever come down the pike. Pat, what do you think? What will we see out of Travis Hunter this weekend?
I don't know. I would presume they will try to dial that back to 100 or maybe a little less than 100 snaps, which is still an absolute ton. But who knows? You know, I mean, it's all going to be, yes, what's his recovery been like this week? You know, is he beaten up? Is he sore? Is he just flat exhausted? You know, what's his energy level like in practice? You know, nobody knows because nobody goes to practice. But I don't think you can ask 129 in a 100-degree day. Like, that's superhuman what he did. It's just preposterous. And there's, you know, a lot of sprinting going on when you're a wide receiver and a defensive back and you were covering main guys. And, I mean, you were running a lot of deep patterns. So I would anticipate they try to get it under 100, but who the heck knows? This will be a slower game. Nebraska will play a more slow style, I would think. They certainly did in their first game. So this is it's going to be, you know, a little bit of a different sort of just back and forth sort of affair. I would anticipate, you know, he's going to play both ways, and then the question is how much and how much do they need him? I think they're going to need him plenty, and we're going to pick this game later, right?
Yes.
So, okay. I'll stop there.
You know, and he actually played, I think, more than 129. I think that those were the plays that counted. So he played actual snaps where there were penalties, I believe. I think it's Colorado, the NCAA actually released, like, it must have been the school, the actual snap count, which I think was 146. Oh. So he played like 17 more plays that were probably not counted because of penalty or something else. So it was remarkable. And I was there, you know, for that game last week. We talked about it, but it was he must be in top flight shape because it was about 92-94 degrees. And I'm sure it'll be a little cooler for him this week in Boulder, thankfully.
Yeah. I am fascinated to watch. We mentioned 7 million people tuned in. I think it'll be a huge crowd to watch this guy. Very exciting. Also, just a sophomore, which is pretty wild, too.
Yeah.
But he ain't going anywhere. Ain't hard to find. All right, the other side of this, Nebraska, lose in very disappointing fashion to Minnesota in the opener, kind of blow the game late. Matt Rhule is trying to rebuild the Cornhuskers. He is an excellent coach and has done a good job, but he has gone a different approach than Coach Prime. It's more the traditional route. We're going to build this up. We're going to get this back going. Two different pops. Pretty interesting opportunity for Nebraska. What do you want to see? Because everyone's talking Colorado, but what do you want to see out of Nebraska in this game? And what opportunity is there for you, Ross?
Yep, I want to see Nebraska win a one score game. That would be that would be nice. You know, they led Minnesota and were right there. And just couldn't pull it out, and that's been the case for a while now. You know, can they finish? Can they? Because I think this will be a close game. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Colorado will blow them out, but it feels like it's going to be a close game. So can they finish the job? I think since the start of the 2021 season, Nebraska is 2-14 in one score games. I mean, it's almost hard to do.
Yeah, I want to see Nebraska not look like a Scott Frost team, which this one frankly did at the end. Like, they were in position. They had the game. And they fumble the ball to give Minnesota possession to drive for the tying touchdown. And then they throw an interception to give Minnesota possession to drive down for the winning field goal. I mean, just it was an absolute cacophony of errors. They are last in the Big Ten in turnover margin at -3. And they don't have the talent to be able to afford that. You know, Jeff Sims, they brought in a quarterback, and Jeff Sims certainly in the first game looked like the Jeff Sims that played at Georgia Tech. Big, athletic, impressive-looking guy, makes some good plays, but then makes some bad plays. So you've got to be able to figure out how to manage the quarterback position to get good things out of him and avoid the big mistakes with 3 interceptions there. Just really, I want to see Nebraska not beat itself, which, boy, they just specialized in that under Frost, and the first game looked rather familiar.
Interesting little story that popped up. We'll get to more games here. Caleb Williams did a story and elaborate photo shoot. You got to see these photos. With GQ, he definitely wasn't raiding my closet with some of these outfits. I'm apparently behind on the fashion. of the day.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Oh, wow. I'm just seeing some of the photos.
I don't know if GQ ever really liked. I always found those like men's magazines, like the stuff they would tell you to wear. Like nobody's wearing those. Yeah, probably why no one reads those magazines anymore. Like, come on. Yeah. Never one guy who has that outfit. Yeah. So, insular fashion. Anyway, the interesting part was Caleb's dad, Carl Williams, put it out there that he's very concerned about Caleb going to a dysfunctional NFL franchise and how it can impede the development of a quarterback, even ruin their career. Now, you can make a lot of money in the NFL. Bryce Young signed a 4-year, $38 million deal with the Carolina Panthers. However, if you succeed as a quarterback in the NFL, Justin Herbert this offseason signed, after 3 years at the Chargers, signed a 5-year up to $262 million. So you're talking unbelievable wealth if you can get in the league and stay a little while as a quarterback. And this is Carl Williams. And I think this would pique a lot of interest in both at USC and if I was a fan of the Arizona Cardinals, who are the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick, and he may be talking about them. The funky thing about the NFL draft process is Caleb would almost be better off not being drafted than being drafted first. The system is completely backwards. The way the system is constructed, you go to the worst possible situation, the worst possible team, the worst organization in the league, because of their desire for parity, gets the first pick. So it's like the gift and the curse. You don't always go to the worst organization. It's just sometimes good organizations have bad seasons. But I get his point. I mean, I've talked to Archie Manning. His career was shot because he went to a horrible organization. That was the Saints. I've talked to Lincoln, and Kyler Murray struggled because of where he was drafted, Arizona. Baker Mayfield struggled mightily because where he was drafted, Cleveland Browns. I'm adding the teams. The organization matters. The organizations matter. Hence, he says, he's got two shots at the apple. This is Caleb Williams because he's only a junior. So if there is not a good situation, the truth is he can come back to school. So if, let's say, Arizona sucks as bad as everyone thinks they're going to suck this year and they win two games and they got the number one pick and the Williamses say, I don't want to play for Arizona. That's where good quarterbacks go to die. We'll come back to USC for an extra year and hope that in a year it's, you know, who knows, right? It's a good organization that has a bad season. Like somehow the Patriots aren't good. Seahawks, whoever gets to that number one slot. Do you see that as absolutely possible? And I think part of this is Caleb's making millions of dollars right now, cutting commercials and NIL. Is this the maybe unexpected benefit that you could keep a player of Caleb Williams's caliber? Because it's not like he's just getting tuition, room, and board right now. He's making millions with Beats by Dre, Dr. Pepper, Heisman House. I mean, he's got a million things. Pat?
Nope. I don't see it happening. I think it's a nice conversation piece. It's a good little bit of posturing by Carl Williams at this point. You know, what you can do is you can try to do what Archie/Eli Manning did, I suppose, and basically say, well, you can draft me number one, but I don't want to play there, and try to force your way into a trade like John Elway. But let's be real here. The guy has the makings of a pro quarterback, has always had the makings of a pro quarterback, and the faster you get to the pros, the more you start making money, and the closer you get to the second contract you alluded to, where you make hundreds of millions of dollars. You want to delay that by a year and risk getting hurt playing against Wisconsin on a November day in Camp Randall Stadium? I think not. I think not. The number one pick does not stay in school. Tim Tebow stayed in school because he wasn't going to be the number one pick. The guys that stay in school in basketball right now that are getting the big NIL deals, it's because they aren't getting picked. I do not think we are going to see the absolute heavy favorite to be the number one pick in the NFL draft stay in college.
Yeah, I'd be shocked. It's funny, I was writing a Caleb Williams story a few weeks ago. And you know, I don't remember who it was. I don't remember if it was this like marketing agent or another agent or just somebody in the NIL space. But they mentioned this to me. They said, like, hey, keep an eye. He could come back if the number one pick is, you know, he doesn't like the team. I'm like, what? Like, come on. I just kind of laughed it off. And, you know, lo and behold, right, Carl, his dad, went ahead and put it out there. But I'm like, Pat, I'd be shocked. I mean, I don't know how much Caleb Williams is making right now in NIL. I mean, it could be 1.5 million. It could be 3 million, I guess. But it's I can't imagine it's anywhere close to real NFL money. And you'd have to take out an insurance policy, obviously, for injury, you know, if you stayed and all that. It doesn't make much sense. You know, you got to go to class still in college. It just,
well,
it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah, well, yeah, so, yeah, I know. But
you don't have to. Yeah, I'm sure he does want to.
How about the Duke professor stiff-arming Riley Leonard, though? I don't mean to steal the topic here, but.
Yeah, set that up. That's a funny story.
Okay, yeah. So Riley Leonard has this heroic game. Duke, you know, beats Clemson Monday night. They storm the field. Somebody interviews Riley afterwards. He says, please, Professor so-and-so, you know, let me hand in my assignment late in whatever the class is. And Professor comes back on video and says, no, your teammates who are in the class, they worked ahead of time and handed theirs in early. You get no special treatment. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. This is Duke we're talking about.
I thought that was a poor idea to put it out on video.
Yeah.
You basically box this professor in where he has to admit he's giving you the benefit of beating Clemson. That was the one tactical error he made all night. Now quietly send an email, go, look, I was going to get back. The game got wild. Afterwards, I had media. I had this. I don't know. But you knew the game was coming that night. It's not like they just threw a game on the schedule.
The professor said all the offensive line turned in their early.
Right. I mean, yeah. What's up,
Riley?
Riley, that was, do not make him say no. You basically made him say no. If you did it quietly, maybe he just looks the other way and says, hey, 10 a.m. You know, I'm not going to check my email till 10 a.m. Not good. Riley's got to work on that. Smart enough to get into Duke, not smart enough to pull that one off. Not so good. Interesting little study by the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. These guys always are doing studies and white papers and stuff that everyone ignores. I applaud their 40 straight years of just meeting and calling. This is out of control. College sports is out of control. Spending's out of control. And everyone goes, great, let's spend more.
Yeah. I mean, they have some decent ideas, but
no one listens.
Yeah, they don't ever seem to.
I don't know what these guys are doing. They're great. They're screaming about this. And it's like, you do know that Fox runs the Eric Shanks runs college football. You do know that, right? We call on the presidents the president of Fox. Is that who we're calling on? We call him the president of ESPN because that's who's running the sport. I don't know what you guys are thinking, but anyway, they're well-meaning. And they're not wrong. They're just, I don't know what. Anyway, they point out, because, you know, we had last episode, the coaches complaining there were too many commercials and the bills had to get paid. And this, like rolling their eyes at the greed of college athletics. Okay. This is astounding study. They call it the crossover point in which athletic department's compensation for 11 countable football coaches per school will exceed the total athlete scholarship and medical expenses for all college athletes across all the sports at that school. So there will be, they call it the crossover, when you're paying your head coach and 10 assistants more money than you spend on everything, almost everything else, for all your athletes. Right down to the cross country team, and they deem the all expenses or all the expenses as athletic scholarships, medical expenses, like tuition, fees, housing, food, books, cost of attendance, stipends, medical expenses, and insurance coverage. Okay, this is the crossover point. Okay, already 9 of the 51 autonomy 5 public institutions, so they can't get the details from the private schools, but they get all the public ones. 4 were in the SEC, 3 in the Big 12, and the Big 10 and AC had 1. By fiscal 32, 25 of those of the autonomy five schools will reach the crossover point. Okay, so 11 football coaches are costing more to the athletic department than all the student athletes at the school.
Like 500 student athletes or whatever.
Yeah, 400 some places have, yeah, probably over 600.
Ohio State's got 37 west. Teams. Yeah. There's 30, yeah. like two yeah. teams. Like some, like Auburn has only like 17. That's kind of how, like there's, I think SMU, we're going to talk about SMU in a minute. They have only like 16. But yeah, I think Stanford has, maybe Stanford's the one with 37. But, you know, 36 whatever.
36 or 37.
36.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 36 yeah, at Stanford.
That's just to get the donors' kids in. But we know that. But I mean, the squash team costs a lot of money.
Don't get Pat started, please. Don't get
not, Pat did not buy Brooks way into Stanford. Brooke got her.
That's for sure.
Brooke got
that's
to Stanford.
For sure.
That was legit. The rest
I'm
of them,
sports
though.
Sports writer. I ain't her and
her and Ledecky are the only two I trust. No, everything else. Anyway, that's a wild stat. I mean, that's wild. So stop complaining about the commercials, coaches, and stop saying your sport is a disaster and your sport is doomed. And this is the stop tearing your sport down. You're about to make more money than the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. These numbers are a good example of why, you know, we're here right now. Why the industry is in the position that it's in right now with NIL and congressional hearings and all this other stuff. It's because you can't have a situation where the coaches and administrators are making so much and the athletes who are on the field participating in the events that produce all this money are not paid. And that's, it's a great example of the situation, why we're in this, you know, why college football is in the situation that it's in. You know, if all the coaches made, you know, $500,000 to $2 million, probably wouldn't be looking at this right now. But it's the big driver, and those are some
but look
stunning.
Who's doing the complaining?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, yeah, you know, that's the thing.
Go ahead, Pat.
No, I the people doing the complaining are the ones raking in the money hand over fist at an ever higher rate. I mean, that's the thing. We're getting to the point now where, like, you know, your secondary coach is making what, 400 grand, 500 grand,
oh,
maybe
more? Yeah, more. Yeah. More,
okay.
Yeah.
$2-3 million defensive coordinators.
Oh, yeah.
With multi-year
right. Offensive
contracts.
Line coaches making $1 million. Yeah. Multi-year contracts. Yeah. Absolutely. So these are the two things here. One, again, when you hear these stats and then you listen to administrators say, everything we do is about the student athlete. It's a lie. Stop saying that. Stop saying student athlete welfare is our highest priority. It's not true. It's not true. Making money is the highest priority. Secondly, Big Ten presidents, after being absolutely told what to do in expansion, they all have to call Eric Shanks every morning to say, should I have bacon or sausage? He will tell them. He will give them their marching orders. A lot of times he'll just push that off to his assistant. You know, like, yeah, Eric's busy right now, so I'm going to handle that for you. Have bacon, Michigan. Ohio State, you have sausage. Go.
What about the West Coast schools? They don't eat that stuff. They
egg white omelet.
Egg white omelet, avocado.
Spinach.
Yeah,
spinach.
Acai bowl.
Yeah, kale, spinach, egg white omelet.
Avocado toast.
This is like, okay, so, you know, you hear these things like, you know, so-and-so's going to get paid $50 million to make the movie, right? Because they're Tom Cruise or they're like, whatever, Will Smith, and they're the box office draw. And go, okay, well, that's why, you know, it's free market. And then imagine them complaining, hey, you know, the key grips are starting to get a little bit more money.
We need to do something here.
How in the world do these ADs, and I've been screaming it forever, how do they go to Congress, and how do they get Congress to actually listen and go, boy, we got to protect you. You're right. This is terrible.
Well, now you're hearing coaches and even some ADs, right? Maybe some of them privately, but you're hearing coaches publicly just say, all right, we're done. We give up. Let's just start paying them. The school. Let's
yeah,
just pay
Harbaugh
them directly.
Right.
Let's
right.
go ahead. Let's get. Yeah. Harbaugh said it. Franklin said it. Mac Brown said it to me. Nick Saban's even said it. And we're gonna eventually get. You know, ADs I think are a little more apprehensive to say that publicly. A lot of them, especially in the ACC, I think, are saying it or in the SEC are saying it privately, but they're a little apprehensive to say it publicly because of the lawsuits going on right now. So the coaches saying what they're saying probably aren't helping the case with the House lawsuit and some of these other things. But yeah, you know, it's gotten to the point where the everybody's just kind of like, all right, we're done, or at least the top, you know, 20-30% of FBS is kind of like, all right, we're done. Let's just start paying.
I wouldn't pay him the salary. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, no, a couple things there too. It's like for the coaches, this is good politics too. See, I'm in favor of the players. Yeah. I'm a players guy.
Cruton,
you know?
Always be Cruton.
Always be Cruton. And secondly, they don't have to worry about funding the other sports, which the ADs are like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's like tax cut for the middle class on the political trail, right? Yeah. Always a winner. Never seemed to quite happen. I would not pay him. I'd just let this go on. This is fine. Let the other guys pay him. Their only worry is that somehow the money doesn't come in. But we had another offseason of virtually every major voice in college athletics, from the presidents, the ADs, and the most famous football coaches, telling the public, telling the customers that their sport is a disaster, it's doomed, it's not good, it's the Wild West, it's crazy, it's horrible, we need Congress to save us. And you know what happened in the first week? Television ratings were up 4% overall.
There you go.
Despite a charter ESPN fight that kept ESPN, which broadcasts a lot of football games, off 15 million homes. There's only like 110 million homes in the whole country. So that would have been down. The stadiums are sold out. The interest, we can tell you all the metrics on all of our websites, college football interest up, right? Listenerships are up. Everything's up. And we had the people who run the sport bad mouthing, bashing the sport, even though they're on their way to making it. It's so bizarre. Imagine if these guys actually went out there and told people, this is the greatest thing ever. You got to watch.
Right. Yeah.
Imagine if we could get Nick Saban to do like the late night TV shows or whatever. Right. Like, promote the sport instead of just rip the crap out of it and tell everyone this sucks. This product sucks. And you know what? The public keeps watching. I told you they'd keep watching. I was right all along. Every time they said it was doomed, it's not doomed. Nothing bad is going to happen. There was a whole bunch of media that wanted to pretend and play fearmonger with them. They still are. They're wrong. Stop listening to their podcasts. We're telling you the truth over here.
The off-season default position of everything is terrible is not really working.
It's not working. And I don't care. I don't care that these guys actually make that 11. This is the free market. This is what people care about. So I don't actually care that the 11 guys could make more than all the stuff. That's the free market. But if you're going to have a free market for one, better let the free market go for somebody else. That's all I said. Now, speaking of money, Ross, you hung out with the SMU boosters. This is the most interesting story I know in college football. They are giving up ACC media revenue for 7 to 9 years. Is it 9 years, I think?
9 years.
They are going to fund the program straight through boosters, which I've been wondering forever why someone didn't try this. SMU's got the cash. They are, as you put it in there as a quote, this is what you have to pay to get in the club. This is the cover charge to get into the Power Five. I think there's a line in there. It's only $200 million. I'm not sweating that. Tell us about these boosters at SMU that have bought the ponies, bought the Mustangs into the ACC and are convinced they will outspend a lot of the ACC on football without TV revenue.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. And you know, during the course of like the last several months, as realignment was building and SMU was kind of building its case to get into a Power Five, I'd kind of, you know, you just hear some things and you hear like, oh, the SMU's donors have raised all this money so they can go for free. And I'm like, well, how much money? You know, and it was like, like $250 million. And I'm thinking like, no, that can't be true, right? No way. So I happened to be in Dallas here when everything broke with the ACC expansion, hopped over to campus and interviewed the men kind of behind SMU's push campaign to get into a Power Five. And I uncovered that was true, the things I was hearing. And basically they gathered about 10 to 12 of their biggest boosters in a room back, I think, in April, and basically laid out the proposals that they had made to the Pac-12 and ACC of 7 to 9 years. It ended up being 9, but to go without TV revenue. Now, a big part of this, they'll get everything else, right? They'll get the other distributions, but that's only about 25 to 30% of the total distribution. So they're foregoing $24 million a year back to the league. They'll get around maybe $10 million. A normal ACC team gets about $40, $45 million. That's a gap of roughly $30 million for SMU for 9 years. How do you make that up? You get boosters together in that meeting. They all raise their hands. We're in. Let's do it. Boom. And in that meeting, the net worth of the people in the room is about $15 billion.
Oh. Who's the main dude? Who's the biggest money dude? Do we have a name?
The half of that is one guy, and he is worth, his net worth is, according to Forbes, is about $7.2 billion. And of course, as we're talking, I've forgotten his name, but it's Ray Hunt. He's an oil man. Most of these people are old.
Guy, you remember the name?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Excuse me, Ray Hunt.
I mean, he might say, "Hey, Ross, nice story. Here's $4 million. You know, he's got the money laying around."
Would you like to sponsor the pod, Ray Hunt?
Yeah.
We'll talk SMU every week.
Yeah, he's welcome to the
SMU talk.
The ponies. The pony show. Yeah. Welcome to the pony show.
Boy, fascinating game this week against North Texas. We got to really break this down.
Well, what was too fascinating is they met with Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner in Charlotte, they being the board chair, who himself is a billionaire, and he ran the search, basically. And he basically, this was done board chair to board chairs. I mean, university presidents were a little bit involved, but it was all chairman of the boards and other influential board members at ACC schools meeting with this guy who is a billionaire himself and has actually done business deals with these board members right at other schools. So it's as he told me, quote, he said something like, in many ways, this is, when you think about it, this is really a business transaction. That's what this was. And they met with Jim Phillips. He did in April in Charlotte and basically laid it all out for Jim. Hey, we can solve your football school problem by taking no money. Here's what we will do. And Jim Phillips' response was, wait, what? How are you going to compete? And then they had to show him, here's our bucks. Here's
that
our
is a movie scene. One day, if this works, that is a movie scene, right? Jim Phillips sitting at a desk, and these Texans come in chomping cigars, huge hats, flew a big plane. And, all right, how much? We don't want nothing. Just let us in. Let the Mustangs run. We got it. And it's like, wait, you want to do what? You want to do what? But here's the thing. If you want to buy an NFL football team, even if one comes for sale and you've got a chance, you need like $5 billion. Yeah. You could buy a Power 5 football program for $200 million for 9 years. Because here's the thing. They are giving up $30 million, but the current SMU football budget was only... I think they spent 21. Oh no, they're at, what was it? They're athletic. I had this number. Pat, you say what you want to do, and I'm going to find this number because it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, no. All I was going to say, Dan, you absolutely nailed it in your column on SMU buying its way in, where you said that if there's one thing a rich guy in Dallas can't stomach, it's a rich guy in Fort Worth getting his way, and that's they watch TCU. They watch TCU go to the playoff, get all that attention, all the revenue, all the enrollment boost, everything that goes with that. And they're like, well, we hate TCU. We need that. Let's go get it. And everybody's there to literally pony up.
Okay.
There you go.
Here it is. SMU spent $21.2 million on their football program last year. North Carolina spent $30.2 million. The gap isn't that big if you only care about football. Now, that football program made $44.4 million at North Carolina, so it helped fund the others. But North Carolina has like 28 sports. SMU has like 14. But if all you're caring about is football, what stops them from saying, all right, let's spend $45 million. We're now 50%. We're spending 50% more money than North Carolina, which is your, I would, high end. I don't know what Clemson's is. I'll check Clemson. They're probably the highest in the Clemson football expense was $55 million. And it made 63. So You're not that far off. That's high, but you could get there. That's, I guess that's your 30 million you want to spend like Clemson, but I don't know if you have to. You can spend more. North Carolina's good.
Yeah, and they raise, the Mustang Club raises about 15 to 20 million a year. And when you look at others, at least last year reported, and you, that's on the level of like a Arkansas, Purdue, North Carolina was on there, you know, in between 15 and 20 million. So they've got the money in donor base, in resources as far as Dallas, Metro, all that, of a Power Five. You know, they've got to start winning consistently. It's the big thing, and it's going to get a little harder now.
It's going to get a lot harder. All right, let's get to Race the Case right after this message. All right, we do not want to make this long, so let's make the picks quick, because we got the way the setup was. It was a quick turnaround on our three pods in 4 days. Want to give people, so we don't want to go too long. Let's make our Race for the Case picks. Number 10, Notre Dame at North Carolina, very interesting game. North Carolina State. I'm going so fast, I forgot the state. NC State hosting in Raleigh. Notre Dame is 7.5-point favorites. Games at noon on NBC. Speed round picks. Pat?
Give me the Irish. Wasn't very impressed with NC State in its opener, and I have liked what Notre Dame has put on the field so far, both sides of the ball. Give me the Irish. Lay the points.
Ross?
I think that Notre Dame probably wins the game, but I think it's going to be close. So I'm going to take the Wolfpack. NC State really likes this quarterback they got, this Armstrong kid, really versatile. So he's a dual threat. Had 100 yards, I think, in their last game. Had 150 passing. So NC State to cover it, maybe not win.
Sean,
I am taking Notre Dame. The fan arrogance tracker for them isn't high enough for the collapse yet. So I think they still have another quality win, and Hartman's comfortable playing in the Carolinas. So Notre Dame to cover.
I actually like NC State too. I'm with Ross. So I think this is going to be a tight game. They're going to bow up and play a really hard game, but I do like Notre Dame to win outright. So I'll take NC State with the 7.5. That little hook is nice. All right. We talked about it earlier. No need to rehash. Nebraska at number 22, Colorado. Buffaloes at one point were 7.5-point home dogs in this game. They're now 3-point favorites. High noon on Fox, big noon. Ross, who you got?
Yeah, give me the Dion show. I think they win this one, but I think they come back to earth a little bit. I think Nebraska once again gives away a fourth quarter lead, in Dion and the guys take it.
This will be a close game. A lot of intangibles actually in Nebraska's favor, but this is going to be as rocking as Folsom Field has been in decades, and Colorado has better talent. Give me the Buffs to win, cover, and keep the prime train rolling.
Yeah, the train is the exact right word. It's too much fun right now to go against Colorado. Nebraska's not very fun right now, so I will take the Buffaloes to cover.
If Matt Rhule pulls this off, he can come in with the receipt talk. He can do the receipt story because I've
got receipts.
I'm going right. Colorado on this also. Number 20, Ole Miss at number 22, Tulane. Rebels, Ole Miss Rebels giving 7.5, 3:30 on ESPN2. Pat.
7.5 might be a little too much. I think that's going to be a bit of a shootout. Michael Pratt was awesome in the first game, NFL prospect at QB for Tulane. So I'm going to take the Wave to cover. I don't know if they win, but I think it's going to be a lot of points on both sides. It's going to be close. Wave covers.
Yeah, this is a kind of an exciting game. Maybe one of the more intriguing of the week for me. I'm going to go with Ole Miss. Just going to outlast Tulane. Pratt did have a great game last week, but Judkins at running back, I think for Ole Miss, kind of wears him down. So give me Ole Miss to maybe barely cover that 7.5.
I'm going to go with Ole Miss also. Tulane returns a lot of talent. They have a strong offensive line, but Ole Miss looks sharp. And I know they beat up on Mercer really bad last week, but they just look like a machine. So they haven't broken down yet. I'll go with the Rebels here.
This is a tough game. I don't know what I'm getting out of Ole Miss. I'm going to take Tulane with all those points. Also, podcast attorney Craig Mordock would be irate with me if I picked against Tulane.
True.
So I'm going to pick Tulane. They got too much back. This is the game they've been circling. They beat USC last year. They've played high major teams. This is the one they want. I just don't know how good Ole Miss is yet. And maybe they're going to show me that in a big way on Saturday. A&M, Texas A&M, travels to Miami, 3:30 on ABC. A&M is giving 4.5. The Canes home dogs.
Yeah, here it is. The game that we may know if the A&M thing's going to work with Bobby Petrino and Jimbo Fisher on third and two in the fourth quarter and down by a field goal. Who gets to make the play call? Give me Miami in not just to cover, but to win.
Ooh. This is a tough one. I think A&M has better players, but I like Miami as a home dog. And as we talked about on the podcast earlier in the week, I like the Lance Guidry defensive coordinator addition at Miami. I'm going to say Tyler Van Dyke makes more plays than Connor Wegman at QB, and Miami gets enough stops to cover and maybe win outright. Give me the home dog.
I love the toxicity bowl here, and nobody's beating out that Texas A&M staff in toxicity. And they're going to give their program enough hope to keep Jimbo there for another year. So I'm taking Texas A&M to cover in a big win versus Miami.
This is really the programs of great ethical qualities. I love it. Half the crowd could be A&M. I don't know. Yeah. I'm going to take Miami with these points. They have a way in these real big matchup games of coming up huge. If you give me 4.5 on Miami, I'm going to take them. I may totally regret this. I may already hate this pick. I think I already hate it.
Sounds like you do.
I think I do.
You're giving off you hate it vibes.
One second after making the pick, I hate the pick. I'm sticking with it. Miami. All right. Perfect. Number 11, Longhorns. Texas Longhorns heading to Alabama. Play the Fighting Sabins. Roll Tide. Alabama is giving 7. Game is at 7 p.m. on ESPN, as long as you're not a charter subscriber, I guess. Pat, who you got?
Oh, boy. All right. I acknowledge that I've been the guy saying that the Saban demise has begun. They've started sliding downhill, but I can't.
Backtracking.
I can't pick against them here. Just too many years of experience of picking in these situations for somebody to either cover or win against Alabama, and they don't. So I'm taking the Tide. I'm laying the 7.
I met with Sark back in August, and I said, what's different from year 1 to year 3? And he said, well, year 1, we had a bunch of excruciating losses. We had a bunch of excruciating losses. We couldn't bounce back. Year 2, we bounced back from the losses, but we still had the losses. And year 3, he's hoping for that the team is mentally prepared to close out games like they couldn't in year 2. And one of them was Alabama. I don't know that they close this one out, but I think they definitely cover 7.5. He'll give me the horns.
Yeah, everything in my gut is telling me to take Alabama right now. History, just the inner spirit, but I have to fade that hard. I'm going with Texas to cover this game.
I like Jalen Milrow. I like this running attack. I like this defense. I like to play in the lines. I'm taking the Roll Tide on this one. Alabama wins, covers. I like this team. All right. Lock of the week. Let's start with Ross. Who is your lock of the – okay, good start.
I forgot about that. Let's start with Pat, or give me a minute.
Do you need a moment?
I got one.
I was trying to help you get out of here. Pat Ross has got a phone call he's got to make, so yeah. We're trying to help him out.
The number I've got on this is UCLA giving 13.5 to San Diego State. If that's the number we're using, I'm going with that, and I'm taking the Bruins to cover. I was not impressed with San Diego State in the first game against Ohio. They won, but boy, that is a struggling offensive bunch. And I think Dante Moore is going to play more. The offense is going to be even more dynamic for UCLA. Bruins going to score some points. Bruins defense is better. Bruins win and cover a 2-touchdown spread against the Aztecs.
All right. On my way out here, give me the Hokies at home to cover the 3 against the Big Drummers. Oh. And Little Drummers, too, for that matter.
Little Drummers.
Are you taunting me? Are you taunting me? All right, Virginia Tech over Purdue. All right. Go make your phone call. Go do some work. Yep. You're going to miss the big update on the story, but I'll text it to you, okay? I'll text it to you. Sean, I'm sorry. Sean, who you got? Lock of the week.
Yeah. Scroll through the BetMGM lines all last night, and one stood out to me. Oregon given 6.5 to Texas Tech. Texas Tech looked weird last week. Oregon looked pretty sharp. So I'm going to take the Ducks here.
That was an absolutely great analysis of what Texas Tech was. I agree. I watched that almost that whole game. They looked weird. There were times they looked great. Then they did not look great. All right. I feel obligated to pick Iowa and Iowa State just because, I mean, we love Iowa. It's just going to be nuts. The Cy-Hawk game. It's in Ames. Donald Trump is showing up. Okay. That's just what this thing needed was a little more chaos. The only sad part is the guy doesn't drink. So, you know, but I have no idea. Iowa State just had four guys plead guilty, like, to underage gambling. I don't know. I can't. It's a 3.5 spread, which is the Brian Ferentz offense is a mess. I am predicting drunkenness. That's what I'm predicting in that game. The game I absolutely, so I'm not picking that game, but I see you, Iowa. I see you, Iowa. I see you, State of Iowa.
You're ruining our chances to have the All Iowa podcast.
At least I'm mentioning them. I cannot pass this up. Everyone knows I'm a UTEP fan, okay? I wrote the book Glory Road. Don Haskins, 1966, Texas Western. Love El Paso. Love the Sun Bowl. Love the Miners. They are traveling to Northwestern on Saturday. And it's believed the first time ever. They are a road favorite against a Power 5 team. Northwestern sucks so bad that they are 1.5-point home dogs to UTEP.
That is unbelievable. I mean,
UTEP, not Texas State, not TUT San Antonio, UTEP, El Paso. And I am not passing up the chance to ride the road favorite, the Miners. Go up there, beat the Big Ten school, beat their purple, beat their hazing, bring the game back. Take the victory back to El Paso. Everyone down at Rosie's Cantina. I'm taking UTEP, laying the points. I cannot deny the opportunity to pick UTEP in a road Power 5 game, technically Power 5.
Giving points. It's astounding. Like, how did we ever get here?
I don't know. I don't know how this is even possible, but there we are. Okay. Finally, we had to get Ross out of here, so we had to speed up the – Pod's, in case you didn't know, Pod's a little disorganized, per usual. Actually, because we're working. Like, this is the thing. We're not podcasters. We have actual jobs. As predicted, the Daily Mail has not given up on the biohazard Delta flight. Madison Burgess for Pulitzer Prize. I don't think you can win it if you live in London. I think it's an American award, but I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
Is it right? Contacts numerous people that they. It's all the social media stuff. Everyone say I was on the flight. It was horrible. The smell was terrible. Oh my God. Here is the detail as the plot thickens here. This is the detail that really matters in this story. And Madison buried the lead a little bit. I mean, there's some great stuff. There's a guy, a brother just laughing that his brother had to turn around and smell it for 2 hours. If you didn't know this, the guy, I should recap the story. If you don't know, I don't know who you are. But somebody was racing to the bathroom on a flight from Atlanta to Barcelona and just had an explosive incident, and it somehow ran right down the aisle, and they had to turn the plane around and replace the carpet before flying to Barcelona. Totally crazy. Totally crazy. But here is the incident. Here's the comment. Madison contacts this person who is named Marie Beals Bassinger. Her and her husband were in first class, so they did not witness the incident, didn't really smell it. However, this detail comes out in the quote. It was an experience I hope no one has to go through. I hope the poor woman that had this experience recovers.
Oh, okay.
It was a woman.
Wow. All right.
We
woman
brought
hit
this
the varsity.
we hit the possibility that it might be, is it, yeah. Are we sure it's a man who would crap up an entire international flight? And we just assumed it couldn't be a woman. We had that much respect for the females of the world. And now we find out it was a woman. Pat, what the hell is going on?
You know, maybe it was a sexist position from us. Think that a woman, you know,
I apologize to all of us,
that much havoc.
All of us dudes out there, I apologize to all of us. I think you all were with me on that.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%.
I mean.
So, wow. Wow. Okay. Well, yes, let's, by all means, please keep her identity secret, though. Because there's just no recovering from this. If we're going to really investigate this, we need the flight manifest, and we can cut it roughly in half. Half the guys are out. We got to look at all the women, and then figure out which women ate at the varsity.
Who ate at the
F terminal?
At the F terminal, not the one down by Georgia Tech.
Nope.
Anybody going to Georgia Tech at home this weekend? I don't know. Go to the varsity this weekend. Get a chili cheese dog. That could have been it. We now know it was a woman. This is absolutely unbelievable.
It is. The plot absolutely thickens here.
Yeah, I blame the Spanish men that I had blamed. I had
right, you had constructed an entire theory.
I had a person of interest. That wrongful prosecution. All right. Enjoy the weekend. Great games. If you're flying, you know, plan ahead. Think ahead. Think of a game plan.
If you need diapers, wear diapers.
If you got to. I mean, anything's better than that.
Yeah.
And, shoo. I mean, it really is. There is some female equality going on when even women now can have that in.
Destroy a plane. Yeah.
Stunning development. Daily Mail, keep it up. Keep it up. We will talk to you later.